Hey everybody, and welcome to the third instalment of our World Cup soccer cast. This is Vassals of Kingsgrave. I'm Bina 007, and I am joined by Ali.
I'm Lee, chaotic neutral in the forums.
And by Bing.
Hi, this is Shushiner in the forums.
And hopefully we'll be joined maybe by Noah later on. We are here to talk about the two semi-final matches, the final and apparently the third place playoff, which I didn't watch, and to round up our soccer coverage. If you've enjoyed this, if you're the listener and you've found value in it, then please let us know on the forums or on the YouTube comments. I think some of the guys here are considering doing a monthly Premier League roundup, so it'd be good to know who out there is listening and what they'd like to see if we continue the soccer casts. So let's begin with the semi-finals. Shall we do the France-Belgium game first?
Yep.
Probably the match of, or what I thought was going to be the match of the tournament, although in the end it just felt much easier for France and much less of a contest than I thought it might have been.
Yeah, well, France has been playing this way this entire tournament. They pack it in. They're willing to concede possession. They play three defensive midfielders, two of them masquerading as wingers. They play Olly Giroud, who it's my favorite stat of the entire tournament. 13 shots, none on goal, entire tournament. Six of which he was a starter.
Oh, that's incredible.
But it works. You have, so the major difference, Belgium had a great game against Brazil coming into this. But the major difference between Brazil and France was that Brazil's central defensive midfielder was Fernandinho and Paulinho. And they're just not at the same class as N'Golo Kante, Pogba, and Blaise Matuidi.
Even just Kante himself, he can just boss that entire midfield by himself. He's just that athletic and that good. He's easily the best defensive midfielder in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Easily.
Defensively, there just weren't that many holes. France did not have that many holes for Belgium to exploit. They couldn't do the same thing against Brazil as they did against Brazil because they counterattacked against Brazil. France just doesn't even come out of their half that much. And when they do, it's just three or four guys just relying on their pure individual brilliance.
Yeah. Mbappe. Just imagine like a very, very skillful Leicester. That's... Yeah. Like title-winning Leicester. That's pretty much how France are playing. And that's how a lot of teams are playing these days as well. You look at Tottenham and Liverpool in particular, and they play this high-pressing defensive style. It doesn't really bother too much if they concede a lot of possession, but their counter-attacks are that deadly and lethal that that's where they seem to get a lot of their goals against. The bigger teams were earlier in the tournament against Denmark, not so much Denmark, but definitely Australia, where they've actually got a lot of possession. They really find it hard to break through teams, which you're solely reliant on Pogba for France or to create this creativity in midfield, the same as like Eriksen for Tottenham and formerly Coutinho at Liverpool. They've changed a little bit now, but that's pretty much seems to be a very legitimate modern tactic that seems to be put into effect, probably with a little bit less pressing from France, but it's still very, very effective. As long as you can defend your lines, your back two lines are right, and you've got a striker like Giroud who's willing to put in a bit of work rate, despite the fact that he lacks any kind of finishing ability whatsoever, then it's definitely a great basis to have a decent team from. And Deschamps just relying on individual brilliance from a lot of the French players seems to have paid dividends for him. So credit where credit is due.
It's not pretty, but it works.
Definitely. And I feel like Belgium almost had played like their final in that Brazil game. Just so much emotions put into that game. And tactically, they were absolutely superb. And Martinez, I think he hit every single button correctly. But then coming into the French game, he just... he didn't have a great starting 11 in terms of his tactics. I thought, despite how much I love Dembele, I thought he gave the ball away way too much in comparison to what he normally does at club level, and it just seemed to lack a bit of pace. And when you've got Matuidi and Kunta just completely shutting you down at every angle, and quickly giving the ball to Pogba, like there's going to be so much trouble. And Fellaini got completely shut out of the game going forward by Pogba, who was defensively fantastic. This is what he was like at Juventus and what you haven't really been able to see at Manchester United for Pogba as well. So I think it's a lot of credit to Pogba for putting in a shift. I think Mourinho is the problem there, but that's a story for another day.
You win this.
I think, yeah. What?
Mourinho.
Yeah, Mourinho is, well, we'll see how long he lasted at Manchester United. I think he's done.
One more season, if he's lucky.
One more season. Yeah, I think he's already wearing on people, but we can talk about Manchester United later. Regarding Roberto Martinez, I don't think he got the tactics wrong. I don't even think he got necessarily a starting 11 wrong, although I'm questioning the Vertonghen as a left-back thing and Chadli as a right-back. That was a little weird. But he had to pack another central midfielders on. And Belgium didn't have anybody else that's better than Dembele. Maybe Tielemans, but he's a much younger guy who's much more of an attacking midfielder.
The Nainggolan.
That would be a guy that would be very useful to have, but then again, maybe they don't get through Brazil if there's it's very hard to say, because in terms of team spirit, this has been a significantly much more united Belgium team than any other version that we have seen before.
Can I ask you all a question? Do you feel Belgium, Belgium plays third in this tournament, do you think that's outperformance for them, or do you think that is where they should be relative to their quality?
I think that's exactly where they should be. I think they are worthy of maybe they're, if they're on the other side of the draw, maybe they go to they'll probably make the final.
I feel like that's a hard question to kind of have a definitive answer to, because as you said, being like, if it's the other side of the draw, they're probably going to go through the final, but you can't consider it an overachievement or an underachievement purely because of the nature of knockout tournament. Like, because this is France that they face in the final, if anyone says it's a failure because they didn't win it, that's completely ignorant of the sport in itself and the nature of knockout tournament, where there has to be someone that gets knocked out. That if you're going to have that thought process, then if practically 31 teams fail this tournament, which is well, a silly thought process to have.
And also, if you just look at the roster, man for man, France has the better roster. And when it comes to when it comes to tournaments like this, especially if a lot of neutrals tuning in soccer like once every 2 or 4 years, what you have is, oh, Messi, oh, Ronaldo, oh, those teams must be awesome. When the case for tournaments like this is actually at this point, you're not as good as your best player. You're as good as your worst player.
Agree so much.
So you need to have a starting 11. It's not about having one single superstar. It's about or even two. It's about having a complete 11 who are all working together. And that's what France had. And Belgium had, they were working together. It was a well-run team. It's just, they just didn't, on that day, they did not have the enough individual talent at every position when compared to France. De Bruyne and Hazard and Lukaku are really good players who are on par with the French guys, but Chadli, Fellaini, even Dembele, those guys just not there compared to Pogba, compared to Kante, compared to, and even if they had Nainggolan, I'm not sure even he would have made that much of a difference.
I don't think so either, but it still would have been an option to put on the ground instead of Yanajai, who you would have felt, you just would not have felt comfortable putting him on the pitch in that game. The problem with the tactics, like I will give as much credit to Martinez throughout the tournament as I can, really. Probably a little bit less in this match, purely because it took him way too long to change things up. Like, I understand, I think Dembele was subbed at halftime anyway, but I just purely because it wasn't great in the... it wasn't great in the starting 11, so it just didn't work out there. Because the problem with the Belgian team is that with that lineup, they tend to play really, really narrow, and you're not going to get past that narrow midfield that it's defending anyway, because the French haven't got a really wide midfield as is. But when they did end up going out wide, they were just so compressed that they had to go back through the middle, but they can't because you've got Matuidi and Kante there as well. So it was the same for England against Croatia, where Belgium continuously just passing around the penalty box and not being able to have any penetration because of just such a well-drilled, defensively solid French team.
It's like punching into a brick wall repeatedly over and over again. It's just, what can you do? and the fact, I mean, Belgian players, a few of them whined a bit towards the end and after the game, saying, "Oh, the less ambitious, the more defensive team won. Like, we played actual football. France was playing anti-soccer."
Courtois.
Hazard saying, "I would rather lose with this Belgium than win with this France." If you look at the stats, France had 15 shots compared to Belgium, I think, at 9. So, if Olivier Giroud know how to actually put the ball towards somewhere towards the goal rather than just whatever the hell he was doing, this wouldn't even have been close.
And the funny thing is, I think that both Courtois and Hazard forget that they actually play for Chelsea, who pretty much love this, and under Mourinho for quite a while, which they just love this defensive style and pragmatic style rather than that. Yeah, so I found it quite hypocritical of both players. But
they just lost in the final.
Not the most humble way to be in defeat, but sure, why not? Each their own.
So maybe it's hard. I mean, I still think if you play this game out of 10 times, maybe Belgium wins 3. France just...
So it's a fair result.
Yeah. I could say that. I think Lloris' save for Alderweireld was pretty key as well, because that would have made it 1-0 to Belgium, and then they would have been the one that would have had to sit back a lot and then have to push on the counter. So I think with the France games, the first goal is such a big key as to who's going to win the game, because it's going to completely change the dynamic of both teams and how they're going to approach the game. Probably not so much for France. If they score the opening goal, they're probably not going to change too much, but definitely... if they could see the opening goal, then all of a sudden they're going to have to open up a bit, which is probably going to open up more gaps for De Bruyne and Hazard.
Sure, but the terrifying thing is then you have Griezmann and Mbappe fully released to actually do more attacking than being forced to track back and defend. So, and that's that's what Argentina did, right? Argentina just went completely suicidal. They put a whole attacking formation against France, and it sort of worked for a little bit, and then France just hit them back and just put the game out.
Okay.
So that's a bomb.
I think a lot of that was to do with Argentina actually managed to hit the front as well. So that's what really opened up that game too.
So, should we move on to the other semi-final?
Should we?
Let's do that.
Well, it's the sun didn't say when it's coming home.
It said football, it was coming home. They didn't specifically say what or when, like A, Qatar 2022, and B, the Golden Boot did come home. So
Golden Boot did come home, one of, and also, technically, it wasn't France, the country that came up with the idea of the World Cup. So it did return to his boot.
No. Yeah. Football's home is England. Don't get it twisted. It's all good. We've had some time. I think every English fan out there would freely admit that England, did not deserve to play in the World Cup final. They probably didn't deserve to play in the World Cup semi-final, right? We were very lucky on the groups. We had a good run. We overperformed. You know, I think Gareth Southgate was very clear after the result that people needed to temper down expectations. We're probably not in the top 5 or even 6 teams in the world. We have lots to learn and to improve on. So it was kind of just... I don't mind that we went out. I kind of mind a little bit how disappointing we were that it didn't look like we had more in the tank. It just felt like really anticlimactic after that first 20 minutes. So that was disappointing, but you know, I don't think anyone can say it was an unfair result. If anything, it was marginally unfair that we'd gotten as far as we did. So, it was just disappointing to me. It was just disappointing to me that in that first 20 minutes, you know, when Harry Kane had a couple of extra shots on goal, it just feels like England in all their matches came out strong 20, 30 minutes in, and then that was it. And we just came up against a team that was better than us and didn't allow us to get away with just scoring off set pieces. So it's all good.
Yeah.
How did you guys feel? Because I was just so stressed watching that match that I can't even remember. I blocked out so much of it. It's like an emotional haze. How did you find it as a neutral?
If England had scored another goal in the first half, this would be a very different game. Because they were on top in the first 45 minutes, clearly. Croatia was a little out of sorts. Modric was actually not doing that well in the first half. They actually got it because they were Modric was the guy who committed the foul against Trippier. That led to the Trippier free kick goal. And there were holes in the Croatian defense. They were there to be taken.
Took them about 35 minutes to really just plug those up and get a foothold in the game, because I felt like they did control the last 10 minutes of the first half.
They got back into it a little bit more later on, but. So the what Croatia did, and this you have to give a lot of credit to the Croatian coach, Zlatko Dalic, who he realized things are especially in attack were not working, so he switched the wingers. So before it was a left foot Rebic, the right footed winger, and the left footed winger, and Perisic, the right footed winger, just crossing the ball aimlessly. They wasn't doing anything. At halftime, he switched them around. So the Perisic was now attacking. And then you have Mandzukic in there. But Perisic was now attacking into the box. And from that point on, Perisic just suddenly became one of the best players in the entire tournament. England just had no solution for Perisic.
And I think the problem with that as well is that because Trippier's playing so high with the freedom that Walker's going to be able to cover him as well, but Walker's, as a centre-half, is still not defensively as acute as what he should be. You can tell in that Tunisia game that he constantly gets caught square and side-on, so he's always exposing his back rather than keeping an eye on the ball and the player. And that's one of the things that happened for the goal as well, is that he is just too square, the same as Trippier as well. So if Trippier is not as square, then he can see the danger and be able to actually call out to Walker to close the ball down. So silly defensive errors that are easily avoidable just with a better positioning and a better voice. And the second one, it's just another switch off, unfortunate, from Stones and not being alert to an aerial ball that could go anywhere. So.
But the more important thing is that, and also Croatia forced the midfielders to press much harder and much higher, and just basically just completely took over the midfield. And so what was disappointing for me about Southgate was he didn't change anything.
Yeah, there was nothing there. There was nothing to go to when it was going wrong.
Well, it's not just nothing. It's one for one substitution. It was Rashford Sterling.
Stupid substitution. Sterling was like one of our MVPs at the point.
Well,
and he had a good half decent game at that point as well, because he's causing a lot of trouble defense. And I don't think Rashford added anything in the game in hindsight.
No, not really. Rashford was basically played as Sterling did, except much worse, because Rashford is a lesser player than Sterling.
It was the most. Yeah, it was genuinely quite a sort of unthinking. It was just an unintelligent substitution that worsened the quality on the pitch, and was just, and you know, having backed Sterling for so long, it was just weird to see Southgate kind of almost cave, and it felt to me like it felt weak, that substitution.
Well, I don't know about fitness levels. Maybe he just thought Sterling couldn't keep this up for 90 minutes anymore, and just switched on another guy. But at that point of the game, they need to change their formation in somehow. Whether it is putting on another central midfielder, whether it is Eric Dier, you switch Ali for Dier. That's a different look. It's a more defensive look, but maybe after the Perisic scored the goal, maybe that's, you need to rest control of the midfield.
Yeah, I didn't actually mind if Daly came off for Loftus-Cheek, because Loftus-Cheek is still quite defensive, but very, very attacking and a lot more creativity than Dier. He's probably not as defensive as Dier, but he's still going to add a lot more steel and stability in midfield, which Ali, unfortunately, he's been forced to press way too much wide, and
Well, the problem with Ali and Lingard is they're not genuine central midfielders. Neither of them really play that position for their clubs, right? Lingard is usually more deployed out wide or as sort of a support, weird combo forward type. And Ali usually sits right behind Kane and whoever the two wingers are for Spurs that day. So what they're asked to do is basically make runs to support Kane and Sterling whenever possible. That's what they know how to do best. But when it comes to actually fighting for the ball in the midfield, neither of them are up to that task. It's not really their fault that they couldn't do it, but
that's got to come down to formation as well. That they're forced to have to do this kind of stuff, with they're not quite adept at doing.
Well, yeah, it is a relatively new formation. The fact that it took England this far is quite amazing already. But at the end of the day, it comes back to France versus Belgium. England just didn't have that many guys, that many bodies. Right, that when they encounter a huge problem like this, it's not just the Colombia game. Colombia responded by scoring a goal, but then they resorted back to anti-soccer, in which they anti-football, in which they basically try to kill people instead of trying to play a game. But in a game like this, they really needed to change something. And where just Southgate didn't know who to trust, or he just didn't know how to change things around. So
can I suggest something that may be controversial with the listener, especially if the listener is English? Is this analogous to Churchill was the right prime minister to get us through World War II, but then immediately afterwards we voted him out of power in a landslide, much to the rest of the world's amazement, and put someone else in power? because that was the right government for peace and everyone thought we were ungrateful assholes. Was Gareth Southgate the right manager to bring together this young group of teammates into a cohesive whole to give them confidence and to, you know, get rid of some of the typical monkeys on the back like penalty shootouts with his scrupulous research and practice? And is the person who needs to take us over the next 2 years to the Euros and develop the talent and give them a broader skill set and more flexible tactical formations a different manager?
If there's a name, I'd like to hear it.
Well, should we be looking? Should the Football Association be looking for a different manager now?
Well, the thing is, they were looking for someone. Selfgate, remember, was never their first choice. Selfgate sort of just landed a job because no one wanted it.
Oh, believe me, right, I know. But you've got to assume that that's slightly more attractive to people now that maybe they're surprised on the upside.
I don't know. I still don't know because, go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, I personally don't think so. I'm actually going to be quite lenient on Southgate in terms of tactics on this World Cup, purely because that, sure, England got the right and good side of the draw, and people will say maybe they didn't deserve to be in the semi-finals. But in terms of the opposition that they played on the day, I feel like it's a just result. I don't think that they overachieved. I don't necessarily think they underachieved either. I can't understand why the media turned actually quite quickly on the squad, purely because that all of a sudden when they're in the knockout stages, all I can read from the media is that they should beat this team. England have got the players, they should beat this team, where people seem to forget that in football, you don't really deserve to beat a team. No. Especially like England, after the trouble that England have had over so many tournaments, that they should understand by now that knockout football doesn't work like that. You shouldn't go through just because that you are on paper better than a side, or otherwise England would be a lot further in other World Cups. But that's a point for saying maybe they weren't, the squads weren't as good as what people believed anyway, but that's another story. But for Southgate in particular, I think what he's done is fantastic, and I think he should be on for quite a while longer. And if he was to be usurped in one way or another, perhaps he should still be on coaching staff, because I feel like that you've got a boss that you really, really like, and then all of a sudden another boss who is a better boss, but it's probably hasn't got as great a people skills. Initially, when you start off, you're probably not going to perform to your best, purely because of the people skills that your former manager or boss had. So I feel like that he definitely is the right man for the job going forward for Euros. Is he as tactically as astute as other managers? No, because he's still very, very young and he's quite a burgeoning managerial career so far as well. But I still think that sticking with him going forward, for even aiming for the next World Cup, that's what should be doing. You should be aiming for World Cup to
World
Cup.
What I love about Southgate is he's such a research geek. He's probably now going to sit at home and watch tapes of all the matches and look at what, you know, just as he drilled England in penalties, I think he's now going to go and like have extensive notes on what other managers did to be tactically flexible and try and hone his skills too. Like, he's so earnest and hardworking.
Like with the players, you're going to have to hope that Southgate develops. You have to see Southgate himself as
absolutely
a prospect.
Absolutely. As well. They all develop together, but at least they trust each other, and you can't beat that. Anything else in this game, or do you want to go to the third place playoff?
I mean, just one more thing on Southgate. If you go back 4 years, people were having the same discussion about Didier Deschamps. Is that guy the right guy to take France further? Because if you go back 8 years ago, you have to remember where France actually came from. France were knocked out in the group stages in one of the most calamitous showing, which the team protested and boycotted a practice because Nicolas Anelka was sent home by Raymond Domenech, who was picking sides based on astrology. That's where France came from.
And, South Africa, what a wonderful World Cup.
I know, right? But when Didier Deschamps came in, he was also similarly compared to, like, kind of like Southgate. He was an ex-player who didn't have that much managerial experience, but he got the players together. He got buy-in from the players. And 2014, he had made a lot of mistakes. 2016, he took the team further to the final, but he still made quite a few mistakes there, and they couldn't quite win it at home for the Euros. But now, for this World Cup, he finally figured out, okay, what was the most optimal way that I know how to use this squad? I still don't completely agree with everything he did, but he got things done. And you have to hope that Southgate can do the similar thing with this England squad. That this is a young team that he can develop into and shape into something that's, in 4 years, is going to look very good.
Yeah, I think what Southgate has to do as well is not only develop his own skill set, but also try and cater to, he has to have a bit of foresight as well, knowing the players that he might want coming in from junior ranks, because that's going to dictate the style that he plays. Because it's easier to play a style around the players you have than try and force them into like square pegs and round holes, force them into a style that's probably not best for you. But in terms of just a quick tactical analysis of the game, in my opinion, and you've said it, Bina, like throughout the tournament, the first probably 30-35 minutes for England, in particular 20 minutes in this game, it just absolutely dominated everyone they've played against. So I do feel that if England are able to hold on to that and even just change it up a little bit after about that 30 minutes, then it can be a much, much bigger threat throughout the game. Whereas after that, like after that initial surge, and it's a decent surge as well, then the teams that you're playing against, minus Panama, actually seem to like really work out, and the manager seems to be able to adapt the formation against us. So they find it hard to break through that, and just a bit more pedestrian a build-up. And a lot of that's got to do with the confidence as well. Sure, they've had a lot of confidence throughout the tournament, but when you've got this Croatia team where after about 35-40 minutes have figured out exactly how to defend this, and just get the biggest credit that I can actually give to the game, as much as I dislike the guy, is Mandzukic. The work rate that he had up front was absolutely incredible. No one whines more than him on a pitch than probably Neymar, but honestly, the defensive work rate he put in closing down the attackers, and the biggest thing for Croatia, what they did is they actually had a really, really strong pressing game for the entire second half almost. Yeah. So pretty much what has happened with the England side is they've been able to get long balls out to down the channels to Sterling, and he's been able to run onto it or hold it up and create a bit more space. But because of the higher pressing, they've actually had to pass backwards, and he hasn't had that space as what he did in that first half. So what's actually happened is the ball's going to midfield, but all of a sudden they can't really turn around, so they're having to go back. And that's what you found a lot in the second half in particular, is them passing back to, like, they couldn't even get balls at the Kane, but like the midfield having to pass back to Henderson.
Kane kept dropping back
and trying to get the ball, which you want Sterling to try and do that and have Kane up top. But the problem again, like having that, is Sterling trying to, if Sterling was trying to come in and get the ball, then you've got Lovren and Vida who are just quite easily, anyone can double team a player in the air as well, and made to look amazing is what Lovren thinks he is. But
best defender in the world, baby. Self-proclaimed.
The goalie had to say that 4 days before facing Mbappe. I mean, he's got bollocks, I'll give him that, but maybe in the wrong place. But
I will say this about Croatia. I didn't expect them to win purely because I thought they were just shot. Stamina.
Yeah, and that's what everyone was thinking as well.
I was like, this could be our chance because they're tired. But
they had more energy in this game than compared to Russia.
Yeah, 100%.
So they'd face two 120-minute games, and then every fan, every pundit, everyone in the media was just thinking that England are going to run over top because they've only had that one 120 game. They had an easy, coasty game against Sweden, and you'd think they'd be fresher, but it just goes to show the work rate and desire and athleticism that this Croatia team had.
Yeah. Šime Vrsaljko, I thought he was out, the right back, but he was probably one of the best players against England. He was the one who hit the long cross across to Perisic, who scored the first goal. What's his name on left back? I don't even remember his name right now. I can't even remember his name suddenly. I thought he was injured. He came off. He had to replace, and he also eventually came off with game as well. Goddamn, what's his name?
I don't remember his name, but I can see his face.
Yeah. But they worked hard the entire game, and they got. The idea would be that England, as a younger side who has played less minutes, would have more energy towards the end of the game than Croatia, but it's the opposite, completely opposite. It was England who looked tired towards the end and just didn't have any ideas. And Croatia was gaining confidence.
Yeah, they're not only were they getting confidence, but they're also using the energy a lot smarter, yeah. Where you're only getting a certain group of players, and that's what happens in a modern-day press, is that you don't get the entire team actually pushing up at once. You've got, like, a triangle of players pressing a ball in a particular area where people around that triangle just slowly close in that space and try and force that long ball, which is what Croatia did. They had Mandzukic and Rebic and then Rakitic, their three closing down the whether it be Ashley Young or Maguire, they're actually closing down. So if they do get that ball through into midfield, they have to immediately pass it back. And that's what's happened with throughout the second half, is they're constantly passing back to Pickford, who, as good as he is on the ball, is having to just pump up a lot of long balls to Harry Kane, unfortunately, and being dealt with. And that's where the biggest problem for the entire game lied in that midfield, is being able to win the second balls.
Yeah.
Croatia won a lot more second balls. I reckon almost 80% of the second balls Croatia won, and from there on in you're able to, and the people that are getting the ball from Brozovic, Brozovic was one of the men of the match for me. He just completely shut down the protection he gave in front of their back four, including just in that space in front of Kane, that completely nullified England's threat, where they can't really get too much into play, and they're trying to play wide, but because you're not going to be able to get too much wide unless Trippier put early balls in, and Dyer's making the correct runs, is what he does at Tottenham with Eriksen and so on. But with that Kane chance in the first half, where everyone thinks he's just hit into the post, it was actually saved by the keeper. It was an incredible save if you see it in slow motion. So the ball was on target, and I think that was from the rebound from the first shot that Kane had, where it was a decent chance where he should have scored there. But on the rebound, he's got the ball, and what looked to be an open goal, the keeper's actually got a save to it. So that could have been 2-0, bar from decent keeping, where I don't know where he got the hamstrings from, because he didn't have them in the final.
No. Yeah. Look, that midfield was much more, but Croatia's midfield was just much more experienced, much more seasoned, and to be honest, much more talented than England's.
Bang to right. You don't need to keep saying it. It's painful.
No, but like, the thing is, people still think, okay, England's the big team, Croatia is a small team. It's not how international soccer works.
Look at the teams that Croatian first team play for as well. Not only you've got the obvious, a couple for Real Madrid, one for Barcelona, but you've got a lot of Inter Milan and a lot of these really high profile.
Atletico Madrid, Milan. All top teams. They're not nobodies. None of them are nobodies.
No, Monaco.
These are all
just because that you don't recognize it on the team sheet doesn't mean they're not like high quality world class players, and they play like a high quality world class team throughout that side of the draw as well. So
Harry Kane, Harry Kane, sure, he plays for Tottenham. They've not done much in the Champions League. Mandzukic has been in three different Champions League finals. That's the difference in experience there, and scored in two of them.
Yes. And when you look at the England squad, the only genuine world-class player at the moment would be Harry Kane. But if he's so isolated up top and he's having to come in to like the halfway line to be able to get the ball, then you haven't got your world-class striker that's near that danger area. Well, you can't even get the ball up to the danger area, which is a big hard part too. So I'm less critical of England as what a lot of people are seeming to be, which I don't understand why. Like, people just seem to be shutting it down just because of who they played. Well, no one has the right to just beat those teams. Maybe Brazil. That'd be
Brazil. This Croatia team could very feasibly be Brazil.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was just a bit more a facetious comment from me, but like, football doesn't work like that anymore. This isn't 2002 where like this dominant Brazil is just going to romp through most. So
let's get to the final then, because I'm curious.
Yeah,
having Croatia having been so comprehensively better than England, did you think they would provide... Did you think they would perform better against France? I mean, the final surprised me. It genuinely surprised me. So what were your feelings going into the final, and what were your surprises through it?
The better team lost.
Yeah, right? it's weird, though.
The better team. Well, not the better team. The team with a better performance. And even then, you have to consider the fact that that is the style France plays all the time in this tournament. Yeah.
There were some lucky refereeing decisions as well that went France's way.
Well, that's the problem, right? That's the problem. The France got luck on their side, essentially.
Yeah.
And gamesmanship. But yeah, so, all right. France, well, the problem with, so France got a first goal through a dive, right? Griezmann was not fouled. I don't know if that's something that in future VAR can get into, but it was unfortunate.
Was that one the first goal, or was it the own goal that was the first goal?
Yeah, that was the free kick that led to the own.
The free kick. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if VAR can check like dives for free kicks or something like.
It's not in their the way that they look at the VAR. For lack of a better phrase, the set of rules they already have, like, because they're only for penalties, mistaken identity, and red cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, Croatia did well to immediately hit back at them, the problem became you had the handball leading to a penalty. I mean, I know BBC, a lot of people at BBC, you know, say that that's never a handball. Probably in you could question. I mean, I don't think Perisic intentionally handled the ball.
I don't think so either, but in this tournament that's been given majority of time, so yeah. Stay consistent for the tournament. It doesn't have to be in line with every league interpretation and what to the day, like to the dot of what it says in the rule book, but that's football. You're going to have like grey calls and refereeing interpretations that dictate what they consider a penalty or not in comparison to what's written in law. So the way that I see it is I can see it given. I'd feel a little bit hard done by if it was my team, but then again, like if I'm the team that's getting the penalty, I'd feel like that it could be given. Whether it should be is a different story, but I feel like it could be given. So it's one of those where it's actually just down to the referee's interpretation of what they consider a handball. So I can see it given. It feels harsh, but I don't know if I'd give it personally, but it'd be in my mind. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's 2-1 there, and then them being ahead, France doing what they can feel comfortably do and have that proper game management which is what Croatia had against England after they got that second goal is being able to just slow down the game to their pace. Sure, it's not pretty and it doesn't feel like that they've got a dominant foothold in the game, but you don't have to be comfortable in possession to be comfortable in the game, like. And that's what France have been this entire tournament. They've been comfortable without possession, and they haven't really looked that threatened. Like Croatia did create quite a few chances, but none that are a genuine gilt edge that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure there was one, but and that's where France this tournament have been just so good. They've been able to defend very, very comfortably in front of them, which is the big thing. So you haven't got too many balls coming in from wide, and they've been able to control this space in front of them, which teams are going to want. Wanting to play quite narrow, which is exactly what France want. They don't want you to be able to outnumber wide and bring balls in, because Ntiti is very suspect. Varane's been one of the defenders of the tournament. He's been fantastic, but I think he's like a company for Man City, where everyone seems to be a better defender around him because of just how decent the high quality is and how he's able to communicate with the defenders, and which is what I feel like Varane's been like with Ntiti. Making up for his lack of a game awareness at times, but credit where credit's due for the whole French team. They knew their game plan. They knew what they were going to have to do to be able to score, minus those first couple of goals, which were incredibly lucky. But you can't do anything about the two that they scored in the second half.
No.
It was a counter-attack.
I mean, so what Croatia did very well in this game, they actually took out Conte. I mean, partly Conte apparently had a stomach bug.
That's the worst game I've seen him play for a while.
Yeah.
He is human.
Well, yeah. He could be felled by sickness, apparently. then the Spanish just eventually put on Zanzi, who basically does a lot of the things that apparently Conte can do. I've never seen Steven Zanzi play this well when he was at Blackburn. So
yeah, it'd be genuinely frustrating. And he was probably a little bit better at Blackburn than he was at Stoke as well. And then he managed to get in contact at Valencia, and then all of a sudden
Sevilla,
and then he's just this real, real high quality passing midfielder with such a great range, strength in the ball, and I'd say he'd be one that would have an incredibly high pass completion rate. It doesn't play silly balls, plays balls that he knows are going to happen, and he plays a lot of forward balls, which is it just works, and that's why I've said before where he's the midfielder that Arsenal were missing under Wenger, and I hope that they never sign him. But it looks like they're going to sign him, but it's not under Wenger, so hopefully that doesn't mean anything. But yeah, Nzonzi changed the game and solidified what France were trying to do as well, even without the pressure of Conte, which didn't seem to really have as big an effect as games previous.
Yeah, so I mean that's the problem we're facing up against a team like France, in which they have that lineup from 1 to 23 that they can just even to lose a key component of their team, they can put another guy on and just do 80% of what that guy can do. And Croatia did what probably played their best game against France, ironically, in this entire tournament. But they just at the end they luck didn't go their way. And
yeah. To play, need luck to work up.
Yeah, to beat and to be especially to be a team like France, you need luck to beat them. I wouldn't say France was overwhelmingly the best team, like I don't know, Brazil in 2002 or
Germany in 2014.
Yeah, Germany was a little questionable at times back in 2014. But France could be had. They play a style that is always teetering on the edge of danger, to be honest, because all their games, by the nature of the way they play, are tight. Even this Croatia game, which even though they blew it open in the second half, Croatia almost always feel like Croatia had to weigh in back, especially after Lloris committed that bizarre power.
As a Tottenham fan, I'm not as surprised as what people think. I think the bullet is at Lloris's feet. I tend to worry a little bit. His clearances are dodgy at best. And when he decides to keep the ball at his feet, his decision-making comes into question then. And as what proved, Mandzukic just went straight for him and he just got a touch on the ball and went straight in. That's a little bit of luck that you think that they'd need. But the two goals from France from then on in, when the game opens up, the long ball from Pogba to be able to release Mbappe, and then all of a sudden he gets a shot blocked and then enough time for a left foot first time finish. It was beautiful. But Subasic, if he had legs, then he hopefully would have been able to dive. But
yeah, maybe a lot of what ifs. But at the end of the day, France, they are there. I mean, they deserve to win. They deserve to win the whole thing. And again, a little deserve doesn't really matter that much in the end. They push through. It's not a formation that I enjoy watching most of the time throughout this tournament. A lot of the French games have been pretty boring, to be honest. But
the games that were exciting were the Spanish games because they could attack, but they couldn't bend.
Yeah. Argentina, the Argentina game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'll take that back. Argentina, just watching. Yeah. They were just a moving circus, that team.
Yeah, but basically,
on and off the pitch.
Yeah, basically, you have to force France into action through incredibly insane tactics to get that out of France.
Or what you can do yourself is even just play a more defensive game style and give them the ball and open them up, which is what the, as you said, like teetering on the edge. Teetering on the edge where they're having to actually go at the game. And they've found it hard to break down teams that have sat back as well. So that's probably the game style going forward, is try and out France or out counter France.
But the danger is you're hoping that you can somehow Mbappe, Griezmann, and Pogba, these guys just figure out a way to score, and which is what they did this entire tournament. They just figure out a way to score against teams, even if it's just only one goal. That's all they needed, and they did the minimum needed to win.
The thing that I have to say about France is, and what people will point out to England as well, is in terms of set pieces. But for France, how many of their goals came from them controlling the ball before that? Not just like build up, even just trying to get a free kick before. It's not often that they actually dominate. Uruguay, when they played Uruguay, they actually didn't have, I don't know what the possession stats were, but the goal from the set piece, they weren't in control before that. And as well with the Croatia goals and the Belgian goal, they didn't have control of the game up until that point. So that's why I feel like that. And you look back at the France-Australia group game, where Australia have actually sat back, given France the ball, and tried to say breakthrough, and they found it really hard. The goals against Australia were a penalty and an own goal from just a lucky, just a wild swing from Pogba, really. So Honestly, watching that France game, Australia game, I did not feel like they were going to break us down. I felt like that'd have to be a mistake or a bit of luck to go their way. It did it in the end, but I reckon that game could have gone on for another 20 minutes, and I don't think Australia would have scored another pass. France would have scored another pass Australia. And the same is, like, you could have had another two games playing, like another 2 hours playing in the Belgium-France game, and I don't think Belgium would have even got a ball in the box unless they were crossing, so... they were never going to score there. So yeah. I feel like you had to out France to be able to actually beat them. And Croatia did well enough to actually play through them. But I don't think that really they had enough, whether it was mentally to be able to finish the game or whatnot. But yeah, France in the counter, just lethal. You look at Mbappe, he's increasing stocks so much in this tournament. And for him to be able to have so much space, he probably loves this French style, where I don't think he'd get that at PSG, where I'd imagine PSG would control 80% of the game, where he'd be able to just get behind defenders anyway, purely because they're not as high quality. Whereas I don't think Mbappe would have the same effect in front of a defensive forward line, where he hasn't got any space to run into, and he has to actually run at players, where he's probably getting double teamed, and hoping that Pavard, who's not normally an actual right back, funnily enough, provides that width and gives him a bit of space. So, even though there were six goals, it did feel a little underwhelming, the final, which is a weird thing to say.
Well, it felt like Croatia could have gotten much more out of this game if they weren't just complete. I mean, France had one shot on target in the first half, and they scored two goals. One was a penalty, that was a shot on target. The other was a no goal. And it just felt like Croatia could have done so much more if they didn't go into the halftime break down a goal and were forced to break.
Yeah. I mean, so many things could have changed that match so quickly. If the penalty wasn't given, if Mandzukic decided not to just flick the ball on into his own net, if anything, like the ricochet hadn't have gone straight back to Pogba, there's a whole lot of different things that could have happened. It's such a weird final, except for the two goals that were scored. Three of them, because Perisic was actually a quite good goal from the corner. There was a lot of sloppy goals, and I feel like it was, even though Croatia had a lot of possession, I think I said it before, but even though Croatia had a lot of possession, France was still very comfortable with them having that possession. So just watching the game, I knew the way it was going to go. Congrats, France. That's what I can say. I don't know if you want to talk too much about the third place playoff. I did watch it for some reason.
Yeah, no, I watched it.
For good reason.
I watched it. I woke up later and watched it sort of like, I don't know. It was like an hour late through via recording on Hulu. Belgium were better than England, or the England team that was put on the field for that game. Hazard was a terror throughout the entire game for England. Couldn't deal with him.
He was playing against Brazil.
Yeah. It's a team that's right now at a better stage than England, that more experience and they actually did want to win third, I felt.
I actually felt like both teams wanted to win. England just gave it up like in the last 10 minutes. And then once that second goal was scored, but it felt to me that like both teams wanted to win. Like the celebrations after the Meunier goal as well were quite full on too. So credit to Belgium for caring. And that's what you want to see as a neutral. I'd probably say I'm a lot more biased towards England than a neutral, to be honest. But so it was a Tottenham showcase, and it didn't disappoint in that respect. So I feel quite worried going into the Premier League season. We're having 11 players play in the semi-finals and above, and I'm going to question our fitness for the first month and a half, maybe 2 months. Interesting. Yeah. Coming into a new stadium against Liverpool, which I'm so excited to come into the new stadium, but I'm just dreading the fact that it's against Liverpool, who, even though I don't even know how to assess that game, but I'm scared. That's what I'll say.
But yeah,
it's a good goal for Belgium, that first one. The second one, again, it was just on the counter. Chadley as well, providing the assist for Meunier. It was a good ball, Ryan Cross. It's so hard to defend that, Ryan Cross, across the defenders, in between the keeper, going to the goal. Like, even if you do actually get something on that, you have to be absolutely certain that you've got a decent piece on it, because that can go anywhere.
In the end, England, fourth, it's probably more than anybody believed they could get before the tournament.
You go into the tournament, before the tournament, and you ask if England are going to finish fourth and go out valiantly in the semi-final, I'm sure they'd absolutely take it. It doesn't matter who you play against. You're there. It was a great opportunity, but a better team beat you in the end. So there's
can't
no
really complain.
Not at all.
But the thing is, the England team could be much, much better in 4 or even 8 years, and they may not even make the semifinals.
That's the worst thing with this expectation now that's going to come out of this, is maybe I didn't even think it was the best thing for them to finish this high. Maybe if they put in a great performance against a better quarterfinal team, that would have actually boded a lot better for them going in the future. There'd be optimism without this giant expectation where they're going to just look now at the fact that they made a semifinal. And then going forward, they're going to expect them to be able to push towards that, which, again, take this weight of expectation off the players, which weighs down on them so, so much. You can see it in World Cups gone by, that all the former players, like you've got your Scholes, your Lampards, Gerrards, and so on, and Ferdinand's saying that they felt that weight of expectation and they didn't enjoy playing for their country because of that. They felt like that if they lost, they were just going to get absolutely destroyed by the media and fans. Like, even if it was a good loss, that they should be winning, it was gutless, all this blah blah blah. So I think that's been, it's a weird negative to come out of it. It's a future negative rather than a current negative. So as long as fans and media can just keep their expectations down for Euros, then I think it's going to be a lot better. But it's not going to happen, we know that.
No, it's not going to happen, and that's the people just don't quite understand how international football works.
It's such a different beast.
There's so much luck involved, especially when you get to the finals. And at the end of the day, it's only 7 games at this point. Who knows what it's going to be like, even in Qatar.
It's a small preseason camp, not even a full preseason to be able to gel and intermingle. That's why you got to play a system that accompanies a lot of the players. And that's why I think Southgate did. He's got a lot of Tottenham and Liverpool players. He's played this like high-pressing style with a back three that seemed to be in vogue in the Premier League with those two teams in particular. So... I think Southgate overachieved a little with his tactics. Maybe I'm not gonna like definitively say he has or hasn't, but I'll still give the credit to Southgate because he deserves it. It probably could have changed a little bit in the semi-final, but he'll learn and
hopefully.
I think they've got the right man for the job for at least the next 4 years. So
yeah, keep with him. Hopefully, he's going to learn from this and develop from this and improve.
And he probably knows the youth system better than most managers that they've got at the moment as well.
Right.
So,
and more importantly, so people have to understand this. As much as people say, oh, this England squad, it's going to develop for future. Half of this England squad won't be there for the World Cup, the next World Cup.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. Ashley Young, of course, the really older players, Ashley Young, but even guys like Jordan Henderson. Is Jordan Henderson going to play another World Cup? I don't know.
It's such a high demanding role that he plays that maybe he's probably going to not have the legs to do it.
No, he's 31 by the next World Cup. Maybe he's not, at that time, he's not good enough anymore. Players peak at much, even at this in today, players peak at a much earlier age than compared to a few years ago, I think. The physical
demand. It used to be like around about 27, 28 where they peak, but now it's like around about 25, 26.
Yeah. And some players, like Daniel Sturridge. Think Daniel Sturridge 4 years ago. People think, oh, Daniel Sturridge, that's our future. That's your future striker. That's the guy. He scored a bunch of goals. He looks like a fast paced player who can keep this up. And who is Daniel Sturridge today?
I think there's a big problem with him in terms of injuries and not being out. Yeah. I don't think he's probably like a bit like Andy Carroll. He probably doesn't put the proper preseason and the proper work into it, because it's an actual fact that the less that of a preseason you have, the less that you train before a season, going into a season, mentally you think, oh, well, I'm fresher because I haven't done as much work in my legs, but that's completely wrong. You're more susceptible to get injuries if you don't have a full preseason. So I think that's the problem with what Sturridge had. And ever since he started to get like those hamstring and calf issues, he's never been able to plant his feet, have like a decent stretch uninjured. And it's just halted his momentum. And then you can't get a rhythm, like a match fitness rhythm either. So,
and the important thing is like, and that could happen to any of these English players. It may be not even just if you question the work rate, but it could just be unlucky. Oxlade-Chamberlain is not going to play most of the next season. He was brilliant for most of last season.
Oh,
that's just unfortunate.
Once he found a foothold in Liverpool, I think he cemented his spot in midfield, which is what probably Arsenal fans were just crying out for at the time as well. And he was fantastic. It's such a shame that he wasn't able to compete in the tournament because it was just a very unlucky. What seemed like an innocuous knee injury as well. So that's just unfortunate. But he could have been that missing link as well to be able to drive. You've got Henderson that covers the defence and then pass it to Chamberlain who can drive and close that gap in between midfield and defences, which is what seemed to be the problem in that Croatia game, is just that big gap in between the two. So
yeah, so who knows in a few years what's going to happen.
They got the potential and they live up to it.
There's always potential. And the thing is, all the other countries, they're not staying behind. France, they're not going to stop being good. All their players are younger than England.
Varane's going to be 29 the next World Cup. He's still going to be playing. And he's probably going to be a better, more astute. He's probably not going to have the pace he does now, but he's going to be a much more astute defender. So Pavard's, 22 or something like that? Hernandez, I'd rather not talk about him.
23. Yeah. Kylian Mbappe is 23 in the next World Cup.
Yeah, that in itself, he's going to be a much more complete player. That is freaky shit.
Yeah, so or he has a freaking injury, doesn't make the next World Cup. That could happen too.
Fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But
yeah, Germany, is Germany going to continue sucking like this?
No, they're going to have a completely different up because it's just way too old now. They shouldn't have gone in with the players half the players they did now anyway.
Yeah. Spain, they're not going to fire the manager 2 days before a major tournament again.
Yes, there's a lot of questions going forward as well. This Brazil team is actually very young, so Brazil are going to get better. France are going to get better.
Yeah.
Belgium have still got like another generation that are coming on underneath as well, which you can't quite see just yet because of the strength they have in their first 11 too. So
who knows? Maybe Argentina is good in 4 years. Figures out how to play Dybala.
I think Messi was the problem in the end. Like you're wanting to you want him to be able to perform at his best, but you have to have a team around him, but you don't have a coach that understands that just yet. There's just so many factors that weren't lining up, and if you don't have that, then you've got Dybala and Higuain that play together, that score goals together on the same pitch. Maybe could have been the better way to go, but you never ever going to leave out Messi because it's Messi. The ability he has is just unparalleled. So that in and of itself is a thing. And funnily enough, people will probably think this is Tottenham bias, but I actually think Lamela would have been one of the missing links in that squad as well, like with Messi in there. He's turned into, even though he's still great on the ball, he's okay on the ball, he's turned into a much more defensively astute midfielder where he can have this high press. He adds a bit of aggression into the game and is able to win balls, which outside of Mascherano, they don't really have any real defensive midfielders, and he's just too old anyway, so he's not been able to close down these players. No. And they've got no defensive work rate in attack.
Who knows? Maybe they have somebody coming off the ranks in 4 years. Maybe, who knows? But yeah, no, at this point, right now, Argentina's currently constructed was incredibly flawed and was doomed from the start.
I reckon if you gave him 2 more years to develop under Sampaoli, I think it could have been a completely different story. But
he has been fired.
He didn't have that time.
He has been fired.
He has?
Yeah.
Oh. Right. Okay.
He was doomed.
Good luck to Argentina.
Yeah, good luck. I don't know. You're so fucked. There's so much problems going on. So I think at this point, the more important thing is if England is going to keep developing the way it has, is to keep bringing up these young players. And hopefully these young players will get to play games, important games.
Yeah.
You need...
What I'd love to see.
Yeah. Yeah, you need guys like, I don't know who's the next generation, Phil Foden, Mason Mount, Ryan Sessegnon. These guys need to be playing.
He was like another like shout for possibly he should have been in there. I would have loved to have seen as well is if Zaha hadn't have decided that Nigeria was his national team. Ivory Coast was his national team. And if he had have actually said it was England, like that, he would have been in this squad.
Maybe. Well, you blame Roy Hodgson for just ignoring him for so many years.
Would you have Zaha ahead of Welbeck? Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, I would. Absolutely. I mean, of course, but like, so the idea is I don't know if Ryan Sessegnon has another national team he could qualify for, but you need to keep these guys, and these guys need to be playing minutes, top quality minutes.
Yeah, and Southgate has to implement his style into all three underage teams as well. Yeah. Well, all underage teams, whether it be 19s, 21s, 23s, have to implement that, so that way you can get used to playing that style coming up, and it's going to make a transition much more easier, rather than like you're having your under 21 playing a 4-4-2 with a completely different tactics and then coming into this national team where that's how you make national teams so much easier, where the players know what they're going to be playing. They don't have to try and relearn a whole new set of tactics where they've at least got an idea in the back of their mind through friendlies and tournaments played of, okay, this is how we play under this manager. This is the formation we're going to be doing. These are my roles and these are my other roles when people come on. So you've got a decent idea. And if you have that throughout the youth levels, which is what Germany have had over the past like 14 years, every single youth team has played the exact same style, knowing what is going to be going into the next age bracket, into international. And that's where you said the difference between international and club football is so different, where you've got limited time to be able to prepare your national team. So why not do all the preparation in the underage and the years prior, so that way it makes such an easy transition. And when it's easier to say just to have this long-term idea, but having faith in the manager that you're going to implement it in is as big a challenge as just choosing the right players for the tournament. So
yeah, and but even more importantly, these guys need to play. I think guys like Ozil and Hummels and all those guys, they left their, like Hummels came through Bayern Munich, but he left Bayern Munich to play in Stuttgart for a while and went to Dortmund. And then Ozil was in the Schalke system and he moved to Werder Bremen where he could start at the age of 20. And then he moved on to Real Madrid, etc. So these guys need, like Foden, they haven't done anything. Like people have been pointing out, oh, we have all these cool youngsters, Ryan Brewster, all these cool guys. They haven't done anything. They won an under 19 World Cup or something like that, right? Yeah. That doesn't mean anything. Nigeria has won that tournament. It's probably have won tons of under youth tournaments, and they've not done anything in major tournaments beyond getting to a round of 16. Mexico has won the Olympics. That didn't change what they were doing. Another round of 16 knockout. So there's so much. So you need to temper down expectations of what it could become. And the most important person in the next process is going to be Gareth Southgate.
Yeah,
he's going
to
be.
And as long as the FA have faith in him to be able to grow as a manager under them, he could easily be for a whole decade. He could be like a Vincente Del Bosque as well, probably not as technically astute or have the players at his disposal, but he's got the hard work and dedication to his craft to be able to grow into that kind of person. Whether or not he will is a different story, obviously. But
You're never going to get top managers in the international game anymore. I don't believe so. The club teams just swallow them all up. You go with who you think is the most up for the job. And Southgate has shown, like, who else are you going to do? You're going to go with besides Southgate? Eddie Howe? I don't know if Eddie Howe wants to leave Bournemouth even to coach England.
I don't think it's the right move either.
No, you got this guy who's shown that he's willing to put in the work for him, that he's willing to dedicate himself for this job. He has a solid plan. He is somebody who looks like he has a plan.
Yeah, and as Ben said, like the whole penalty is being able to like try and facilitate to be able to eradicate this whole penalty shootout hoodoo. It doesn't seem like that it's that big a deal, but that's the skill set that he's been able to implement into these players and to be able to actually put that into effect when the time comes. That shows that there is room there for Southgate to be able to continue burgeoning his skill set as a manager and adapt to what he needs to do at the time. Maybe hopefully he can do even more than set pieces and penalties, but you play to your strengths. And as a tournament is, so many goals come through set pieces, and this one more than most. One thing I do want to ask is, what is your goal of the tournament?
It's either Benjamin Pavard's volley from us against Argentina, or I think Quaresma's funky outside of the foot against Iran.
Yeah, that was a quality. For me, it's Pavard purely because of technique. Right. Like, he's cut down on that ball so much. Normally, you'll see players get it a bit more clean on the foot and going through the ball a little bit more, still cutting down a little bit, but he's got over top of that ball so much, and he's cut down on pretty much like a 45 degree angle with his legs. So the actual, like, to be able to execute that itself is incredible, let alone know exactly the technique that you need to use to do that and be able to keep that ball down. It's an absolutely exquisite finish. So for me, that's a goal of the tournament, but it probably hasn't been as prolific for high quality goals as what there was in Brazil, where you had the Van Persie header, the Tim Cahill volley, which would have won it in this one if he had have done it, and the James Rodriguez goal as well. That one was just blessed for high quality ones. It just wasn't as many goals in comparison to this one. I'd prefer more goals than more spectacular goals.
Yeah, a lot of the goals in this tournament were penalties.
penalties and like set pieces.
Set pieces. Yeah. So I mean, but there are a few good free kicks. Ronaldo's against Spain. Trippier's wasn't good. Was pretty good against Croatia.
Yeah, definitely. Got up against Saudi Arabia and.
Yeah, well, Saudi Arabia was that was the defender tackling.
It was still a decent. It's a decent head. It's a decent. But head. I mean, the other goals before that were pretty elementary, honestly. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of good direct goals from set pieces. Good. Player of the tournament for me, it is Modric in the end, closely followed by Kante, because the guy is just so good. And he's the least hateable guy in world football right now. He's the most lovable guy for me. Even though he plays for Chelsea, who I despise, I just can't hate him. Like, it's Tottenham versus Chelsea, and you've got this great creative players that are going on by Tottenham, and then it's just closed down by Kante. And you just want to get angry at him, but you can't. And he's, all right, you can have it. So.
Yeah.
Modric me for player.
Yeah, I think Modric deserved it. Hazard was good, but he kind of got shut down against France.
Although he was probably the best named player. Third best.
I don't know about that.
No, he was named third best.
I know he was. He played his best game in the final, to be fair. He was very good in the final. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how this process works. I think Pogba should be up there.
Yeah, definitely. He probably wasn't as influential in attack, but his defensive work rate transition into attack was just fantastic.
Yeah, and even you say that, like almost all French's goals was, other than the set piece ones, was created by Pogba as well.
Yes, so. he had involvement in pretty much all their goals. So it's like he was involved in both the goals against Australia, the through ball to Griezmann. He got the initial touch before the own goal, and against Uruguay, the two goals. So he's He had a big influence, so
yeah.
I could totally see an argument for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to see Kante win one of these, but they're never going to give it to someone like that. But the French team,
he won the Premier League Player of the Year last year, not the season gone, but the season before, so.
I mean, in the end, like, Modric took this country much further than anybody expected him to, even though on paper that team was capable of doing this. So,
and even if Spain had beaten Russia, I still think that Croatia would have beaten Spain. I mean, when I saw that at the start of the tournament, I thought it'd be like a Brazil-Croatia final. And then actually come towards the knockout stage, I thought, okay, this is actually really likely. But just Brazil were beaten on the day by a better Belgium, and Croatia did exactly what they could do.
Yeah.
Lastly, for me, like the keeper of the tournament, it was given to Courtois. Who do you think it was?
Well, the problem is they only give this award to teams that made it to the play seven games, essentially. So you only had realistically had four choices. I know people like.
Which I don't think it was going to be given to Lloris.
No, not after that final. Oh, he was very good before that game.
Didn't have too much to do, in fairness.
No, not really.
He had one fantastic world class save against Uruguay, but outside of that, he wasn't really tested all that much.
Subasic saved a lot of penalties, but I guess the last game, whether it's just because of hamstrings or something else, he just couldn't. Between Pickford and Courtois, Courtois made more saves against Brazil. I guess that's what it came down to.
I also think Schmeichel in his three games, he was really good.
Yeah, so I think among the not outside of the four that's in the semifinals, I think either Kasper Schmeichel or Memo Ochoa, or even the South Korean goalie.
Oh, that game against Germany in particular, I swear that was De Gea. It was De Gea in disguise and a little bit shorter.
And he
was that good. Yeah, and not the World Cup De Gea. Let me put that out there because he was pretty ordinary. So I love the World Cup, this one in particular. I think this is one of the best ones that I've seen for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's much better than South Africa. I think 2014 started out in the group stages really well with tons of goals, but kind of everything fizzled out and became trapped. Other than semifinal, the crazy semifinal.
Oh, I saw that before the semifinal as well, like these semifinals, and I was I forgot how many goals are scored in between 20 and 30 minutes. 5 goals in 10 minutes. Jeez.
Yeah, 5 goals in 10 minutes. Yeah, now that's you can go to the old World Cup thread in the forums to see how I reacted to that game, and a lot of other people who some of them were no longer around. But yeah, I don't think this tournament had like something as just like era defining game like that. Like that Brazil Germany game will forever live down in the memories as one of the most insane games ever to have played. I don't think any of the games in this World Cup quite reached that level, but I think overall as a tournament, a quality game, because almost every game was close. I mean, that's why what made this tournament, because I don't think there were as many huge surprises as compared to, say, 2002.
Honestly, the biggest surprise for me was the opening game of the tournament in Russia beating Saudi Arabia 5-0.
I think that's the most lopsided game of the tournament
for
me. But I think the most surprising game still has to be Mexico-Germany. It's like...
Or even
South Korea, Germany later on. Well, the thing with Mexico, Germany is before coming in, Germany had that aura of invincibility, right?
Yeah.
Unless you reach a certain level, there's no way you can just beat Germany. There's just no way.
A feeling of inevitability come that South Korea game where you felt like that, where you knew if Germany couldn't do something, then it was there in comparison to, that Mexico game where you had expectations still.
So... I think the biggest disappointment in this tournament has to be Germany for me. It's just... Oh.
Yeah, there's no question about that. As disappointing as Spain were, like, you can't... And Argentina, you can't fault Spain because everything got thrown into chaos 2 days before their World Cup started. And Argentina, they were just shambles from the start. Honestly, they shouldn't even have really qualified for the tournament as is if it wasn't for Messi. No. So...
Argentina was... They were entertaining, I will say this, in all the right and wrong ways.
And to think how entertaining this World Cup was without Italy, without Netherlands, without USA, without Chile, without a whole host of other nations as well that you'd consider worthy of going into a World Cup. So, I think it's incredible.
Yeah.
Go football.
Well,
and Russia as well. Go Russia. It seemed to be such a great atmosphere throughout there. But, I mean, I can't wait till 2026 and actually go to the North America World Cup. Like, Christy and I are going to be over there, like,
hopefully I'll be here. Hopefully I get to go to a few games. It's going to be a lot of games. It's going to be 48 teams in that tournament.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I don't mind it. Like,
I don't know. It'll be madness to figure out how to get the qualify. I don't know. We'll see what that looks like.
I don't know if they've said how the group stages are going to work or anything like that. How I think it should happen is you'll have like however many extra teams per group and still like the top two go through. I think it sounds completely unfair to even have the extra teams in just to have the same knockout system, but it's the fairest way, it's the most clean-cut way, and
probably, but we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I thought I hated the Euro format when they expanded, and that was okay, so maybe I'll come around to it.
Change, we as human beings, we don't like change.
The Qatar ones, I don't know, I have no idea. I have an idea. It's not going to be good, I think.
Still having oppressive heat in the summer. I mean, winter. So.
Winter, yeah, and like middle of a season going to a World Cup.
So insane. Not only is it in the middle of a season, but you're going to have a couple of weeks break either side of it anyway. So
yeah.
So, like, season's probably going to start in, like, July and finish in June or something like that.
It's so stupid. It is so stupid.
It shouldn't have it in the first place. It should have given it to Australia, obviously.
Well, I mean, anywhere but Qatar.
Yeah, I don't think we were ever going to win that bid anyway. I don't know what it's going to be like under Infantino, but, like, I hope it's not as corrupt a FIFA as one's gone by. It's probably not the greatest way to finish off the podcast, but I say the next World Cup on the pitch is going to be fantastic.
Hopefully. And as everybody just dies of heat stroke. Anyways, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's stupid. Hopefully the USA will show up again in a World Cup. Now that the World Cup's over, everybody's at even playing field again. We still don't have a national team coach. That's
in 8
permanent.
Years' time, you're going to be guaranteed qualification, so that's going to be good.
They actually haven't confirmed that.
No?
No, they actually really? Haven't confirmed that. Yeah.
Oh, they have to continue that. As silly as it sounds as an idea, especially when it goes to South Africa, I still think it's a nice tradition to have.
Yeah, but again, who knows what FIFA wants to do. It is 3 teams who gets an automatic qualifier from a single region, especially CONCACAF. Canada's going to be the World Cup.
Cameron Carter-Vickers, he's gonna, or is he American? No, he's American.
Yeah, he's American. Yeah, he's American. Yeah, no, he's our. Now we have a. We hopefully we're gonna have a brand new team and just get rid of all the driftwood. I hope I don't see Clint Dempsey again. I hope I don't see Michael Bradley. Well, Michael Bradley's probably still gonna be around. Jerzy Altidore is still probably gonna be around, but I really don't want to see him again.
No, he shouldn't even be anywhere near your national team. Never once did he actually perform for any English club, and. I think the quality of some of the opposition.
It's kind of sad that he's still one of our best options, though. It's kind of sad.
No.
He was good. He was good at his club in Toronto FC last season, but not this season. So maybe he's done. Maybe we're done with him. Maybe I don't know. Bobby Wood was also crap last season. I don't know. Before the Croatia France game, I was thinking if Christian Pulisic switched to Croatia, he would be playing in that World Cup final right now. He has Croatian passport. They were trying to pressure him to join Croatia before Klinsmann called him up for the US.
Really?
Yeah, and he would be playing in that game. I mean, he will probably be on the bench, but he will probably have a role. But World Cup, it's been fun. Thank you, Lee, for doing all these. Thanks to Bina for hosting.
Thanks, Bina. Thank you, Bing. Thanks, Noah. Thanks, Matt, as well. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening, too. This has been a Vassals of Kingsgrave World Cup podcast number 3, technically 4, after the first one didn't quite get to the recording studio, but... Yeah, thanks everyone for listening and hope you enjoyed, and see you for a Premier League podcast if we get that on. Hopefully we will, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, see you. Great. Thank you.
See you, Bing.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.